How's it going, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. My name is Dan Wilson, a longtime suffering Phillies fan and recent graduate of Temple University's Klein School of Media and Communication. Today is Thursday, December 10th, 2020. It is the first night of Hanukkah to those who celebrate. And on tonight's episode, a two-part episode, actually, I had a fellow Jew on tonight, Gabrielle Starr, who is the host of the Locked On Red Sox podcast. She's also host and has kind of created a business out of a website and podcast at girlatthegame.com, which if you're not familiar with it, I strongly recommend checking it out. I've been a fan of her work for a while. Got the chance to finally talk with her here tonight, obviously with the big news of the day, which was the Phillies finally announcing the hiring of a president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski, who was most recently with the Boston Red Sox. Dombrowski is someone who has won World Series championships before, most recently in 2018 with the Red Sox, but wasn't necessarily a good fit for the Philadelphia Phillies, kind of known for being a win-now president. So I got her perspective, we talked about that, and a whole lot more. So I present to you my conversation with Gabrielle Starr.
Joining us on Locked On Phillies today, it's the host of the Locked On Red Sox podcast, so a little bit of a crossover here. Was nice enough to join me with the Dave Dombrowski news. Also, you can read her work at Girl at the Game. It is Gabrielle Starr. Gabrielle, how are you doing today?
I am good. I had some good laughs today, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before recording. Your first reaction when you saw that Dave Dombrowski, who was most recently with the Red Sox, taking over the president of baseball operations spot for the Phillies, your reaction, what are the Phillies getting in Dombrowski?
Well, you're getting, as I told you before we started recording, it's Hanukkah tonight. We're both Jewish. I called him the Hanukkah present you might want to return. I don't really see him as a good fit for the Phillies because they don't seem to want to spend money. And they don't really have much of a farm system for him to deplete because it's already pretty depleted. So you're kind of coming into Dombrowski at the point at which people usually start to sour on Dombrowski, because Dave Dombrowski, look, the guy has won two World Series, multiple pennants. He's taken many teams to the postseason, but what he does in order to get there, he leaves a big wreckage in his wake. And the Phillies are a team that for some reason, I mean, you're like top 10 richest teams in MLB. So it's not like you're hurting for money like most people during this pandemic, but the Phillies don't seem to want to spend money. So why are you hiring one of the biggest spenders in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, they are a top market in baseball, or at least they should be. They should start acting like it, in my opinion. They're in a big market like Philadelphia. They certainly have the money, although you wouldn't know it by the way the owner acts, laying off people right the night before Thanksgiving. And the guys are worth $3.4 billion. No one is feeling bad for him at all. And yet he doesn't spend like that. He clearly uses the luxury tax as a marker, which is something that Dave Dombrowski likes to flirt with and go over. He, as you mentioned, is a big spender. We were talking before the podcast. I mean, Prince Fielder last year was still getting paid from the contract he signed in, what was it, 2011? When he was with Detroit. The guy does have a history of physically winning. He won at the Red Sox in 2018. He was with the Marlins and the Expos before that. And he does have two World Series trophies to his name. And he also got there with Detroit. But in terms of building a long, sustainable winner and what happens to those teams immediately after the fact, his track record just isn't great. And like you said, I kind of raised an eyebrow at it also, because this team needs to get a lot better at development. The development on the Phillies has frankly sucked for the past decade. They really don't have a lot of farm system pieces that they can point to and kind of hang their hat on. And the team hasn't had a winning season since 2011. And you're hiring a guy who is kind of like a win now. We're putting all our chips into the center of the table because he knows how to just like quote unquote go for it. But I would have preferred a guy who has a track record being a long, sustainable winner.
Who do we actually think is like a long sustainable winner at this point? I mean, the turnover rate in baseball is so much faster than it used to be. You think about a guy like Connie Mack, for example, And he's just around forever. You know, even a guy like Bruce Bochy now with the Giants, like retiring, guys like that who just, even if their team wasn't good for most of their tenure, they were still there for like a decade, even two decades. And you just don't see that anymore. I mean, Brian Cashman being the Yankees GM for all of this time is honestly astounding, because he's been there since the 90s, and now the 90s are over 20 years away. And think about all of the upheaval that another team has gone through in that time. So for me, I don't see Dombrowski having the same kind of leash that he had in, say, Detroit. Like, he came to Detroit in 2001 and he was there for over a decade. And there,
he did get them there, like in terms of making the team relevant. He did. They lost. He didn't get the World Series trophy there.
So when he got there, they had had something like 8 or 9 consecutive losing seasons. Then, well, the first 4 years that he was there, they lost 4 more. But then they started winning. They won the pennant in 06, I think. And they went to the World Series again in 2012. I mean, he will get you places. The question is, what are you willing to give up to let him take you there? And with the Phillies, it just doesn't seem like they are willing to give him the tools that he needs, which are money and a long leash, in order to let him do his job. Like, you're kind of hiring a guy and then muzzling him. And it's like, well, then why are you hiring him at all?
Yeah, he's going to be in for a rude awakening when he learns that this team doesn't like to go over the luxury tax, doesn't like to spend a ton of money. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes all in. Like, the biggest, I guess, offseason decision that the Phillies have, at least now that they have a president in place, I think it's clear that it's whether they bring back JT Realmuto or not. Or it's certainly the one that people discuss the most and people have the most interest in finding out. How much money do you want to give to a 30-year-old catcher just because you traded one of your better pitching prospects away? Like, one of the prospects that actually has shown signs of panning out, who the Phillies had, they went all in. That's a move. Like, that move to get JT Realmuto is a Dave Dombrowski move, and they made it 2 years beforehand. Like, they've gone all in, and now they're like, it hasn't worked. They haven't even made the playoffs, not even in a 60-game season with 16 teams making the playoffs. The Phillies still couldn't make it. Isn't that a sign that this team needs to draft better and try and build for a more sustainable future rather than, hey, we're like, I feel like Dombrowski is the kind of guy you bring in when you're like a few pieces away and you're willing to, like I said, put all the chips in the center of the table and be like, yeah, I don't care how good we are in 5 years. I want to win right now.
I mean, Dave Dombrowski came into the Red Sox after Ben Cherington was dismissed, who is, of course, now with the Pirates. And the Red Sox at that time, they still had David Ortiz. Obviously, they had a healthy Dustin Pedroia. I mean, I just want to look up really quickly. I think he came in. Dave Dombrowski came into the Red Sox in 2015, right? Okay, so 2015, the Red Sox were not good. They were, I mean, it wasn't their worst, but it certainly wasn't their best. And in 2016, which ended up being David Ortiz's final season, and he, of course, got David Price for that, he took the Red Sox back to the postseason. They won the division, and they would win 3 consecutive divisions over the next 3 years. And that was largely because he snapped his fingers and just went out and got David Price, Chris Sale, Craig Kimbrell. You know, he's just like, he was like a mom on Black Friday at Best Buy. You know, he's just like, you spend like,
who has
no tomorrow
budget, who has,
right,
like,
no budget. You just pretend that the credit card bill does not exist. And that was great for a time. But the problem is, for starters, you know that these teams can afford this stuff. So when they stop doing it, you know, it's a choice. And the other thing is that if you are going to hire a guy like Dave Dombrowski, you got to let him do what Dave Dombrowski is going to do, because otherwise there's no point in hiring him. If you're just going to hire him to be your little yes man and fall in line, then why don't you just promote some rando from like your baseball development office? Like, I don't understand
that's
the point.
What they had in the interim, like Matt Klintak was stepped down, Ned Rice stepped in and they were like, we're going to, well, first they said no one wants to uproot during a pandemic, which everyone in Philadelphia flipped out about. And then it was like, what do you mean who no one wants to uproot during a pandemic? The Sixers just hired someone 2 days before that. The Angels hired someone. The Marlins hired someone. The Mets are changing ownership. Like, how can you even say something like that? And then clearly it was like, hey, we're going to take our time. We're planting a seed in case nothing happens. But it turned out that 6 weeks later, we have our guy and we want to win right now. And it's an owner who clearly, in my opinion, cares more about the bottom line and how much money he makes than what actually takes place on the field, which is not abnormal for sports owners. Let's be perfectly frank about that. But he makes it apparently obvious that he was the guy who flew out to Vegas and signed Bryce Harper. That was a move not just about the product on the field, but to sell jerseys, to put butts in the seats, and to generate interest in the team. And then he neglected the team in every other possible way ever since then, to the point where it didn't even matter that Harper was on the team. The team is still bad. This isn't basketball. You can't just get Bryce Harper or Mike Trout on your team and expect to be good. There's a reason why Mike Trout's only played in one postseason and got swept. In terms of actually putting a team on the field, like Middleton, John Middleton, the Phillies owner, is not good at doing that. He's shown no ability to do such a thing. And this, it seems like a hire where it's like, all right, we're going to get people interested in this team again, whether we actually win in the postseason or not, or whether we're good a few years down the line doesn't really matter to me. I need to make all this money back that I lost from COVID because I'm a billionaire and apparently I'm just still greedy and don't really, like, I still can't absorb the fact that things are, I'm much better off than most other people are. I need it's to make so money shameful. From this. It, like, it's so narcissistic, people, and people egomaniac,
like starving and losing their minds, and you know they can't even fathom the idea of going to a baseball game. Meanwhile, these owners could literally make baseball games free for an entire year,
and it wouldn't matter. Like, it wouldn't matter
if they get made baseball games free for the entire 2021 season. Like, say in hypothetical, if fans are allowed in the stands for the entire season or for part of the season, and they make the season free for all fans, but they still charge for concessions. You know what? They would still make a ton of money and fans would be actually be happy for once in their lives. And we're talking about people who can't even afford one baseball game in a 162 game season, let alone multiple games, let alone season ticket packages, let alone bringing their kids. And I mean, to hear a guy like Middleton say, you know, oh, we can't afford JT Realmuto, or we can't afford, you know, clearly BSing when he says that they're not thinking about trading Wheeler. Like, they've clearly considered trading Wheeler. The only person they're not going to trade is Bryce Harper. And
until Bryce Harper like starts demanding a trade 2 years from now, because he realizes,
right, this team because sucks, there's no one, because he's that Will Smith scene where the house is empty and he's just standing there looking around.
It's a good analogy. You're right. Yeah.
Middleton is like, you know, Prince John and Robin Hood, where he's sleeping with all the bags of money. And meanwhile, like all the other people are like starving in the cellars by themselves. It's the whole thing is such a bad look. And the only thing that makes it more ridiculous, the only thing that like compounds this charade of like absolute ridiculousness, is hiring Dave Dombrowski, because he's basically going to be like your court jester, because he can't actually do anything. And he's just going to be there as like some kind of weird mix of punching bag and mouthpiece.
Take me through. So go back to 2019. Maybe you can shed some light and have more. You probably have more knowledge on the situation than I do, where they won the World Series in 2018. And then the Red Sox obviously start to decline, as Dave Dombrowski teams do. And he didn't even make it to the end of the year. Like, was the sense around Boston at that point a surprised one, or was this an ownership group who kind of just got out in front of it?
So basically, the Red Sox went from winning 108 regular season games in 2018, which is a franchise record, to finishing the season 84-78, which was a third place finish in the division.
Hey,
and
that would be the best Philly season since, I know, you're 2011. Like, you know,
after 2020,
I know it's the standard you have, you can complain, but we can't about that.
Well, after the 2020 Red Sox, I'm like, oh man, 84 wins just sounds so nice. Like, I would take a 500 win anytime now. Like, it's crazy. Like, I said this on Locked On Red Sox when I talked about Dombrowski, how far the Red Sox have fallen in 2 years. And that's what Chaim Bloom is here to do. He's been talking about cultivating consistency. you know, because the Red Sox have done this pretty much every 3 years, like in the last two decades. They'll win a championship, then they'll be the bottom of the barrel, then they'll win again, then they'll be the bottom of the barrel again. And he wants to create a consistent culture of success, which would be really nice for like my physical, you know, blood pressure. And also just because it would be nice to see if they could do it.
You talking like that, I'm sure you have parents and grandparents and older Red Sox fans who, you know, up there in Boston who are like,
oh, yeah,
you know, like cringing at you saying that because they were the bottom of the barrel just for so long and could never win all these years. And you've grown up in an era where it's like, they win every few years, they get bad, but they always come back around. And they've won four times in the 2000s.
Dan, I have two great uncles. One of them on my dad's side, he's 102 years old. The other one is 103 on my mom's side. The 103-year-old is a Phillies fan, and the 102-year-old now, sorry, is a Red Sox fan. And he always said to me, I didn't think I would even live to see another World Series championship because they won in 1918 when he was 3 months old.
I mean, God bless him, but he's lived to see four. You know,
right. No, he's a little, technically him. Five because he was an infant for the first one. But,
oh, wow. Okay. But he lived to see four more after he said
he's
that.
Like, so since I turned 86 years old, I've seen four more. So he's like, he's thrilled. He has, you know, whatever. I get it. I'm not even asking for championships. I'm just asking for them to not be absolute dog crap.
That's fair.
Especially when you think about the caliber of players who are still on the team. But you asked about 2019, basically. The house of cards that Dombrowski had constructed started to fall apart pretty much immediately in spring training because Cora decided we play into October. Our pitchers are tired. I'm not going to really have our starters pitch in spring training. So pretty much the first day of the regular season, the entire starting rotation is just terrible. And they never really found their way back except for Eduardo Rodriguez. And Nathan Eovaldi was good, but then he got hurt. Then Chris Sale got hurt. Then David Price got hurt. And I mean, they spent half the season just calling up AAA pitchers to, you know, fill in for these guys. And none of these guys were particularly good. None of them were really anything worth major league level. And that was kind of it. And so on. In mid-September, late September, I was actually at the game when it happened. I got a tip during the second inning from somebody saying they just fired Dave Dombrowski and John Henry's suite. And I spent the entire game like trying to confirm it. And I was like pretty sure by like the eighth inning, but I figured better to be right than to be first. So I waited and they had literally fired him during Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN. Red Sox Yankees, which is like the most Red Sox thing ever to just like fire your GM during
in the middle of a Yankee game. Yeah.
In the middle of a Yankee game at Fenway. But I mean, I think it was just, I had a feeling that he wasn't going to be there for the following season. I didn't think that they would do it before the season was over because it just seemed kind of harsh. I don't know. Like he had literally won a championship for the team like 11 months before. So it did seem kind of unfathomable that he would be out on his ass while the season was still going on. But at the same time, I mean, Red Sox fans, Red Sox people, the culture changed so dramatically after 2004. I mean, there are actual expectations now. And
that's what I was going to say. Like,
it's ridiculous, but it's also not for Boston in the last two decades.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you guys win championships and everything. I'm sitting here. I'm told like everything's relative, right? Like you have your uncle and great uncles and grandparents who grew up in Boston who are like, we never saw anything. But then you grew up in the 2000s and the Pats, you know, won six times. The Red Sox won four times. You have a Celtics and Bruins title in there as well. Like, I at least got one Phillies title in 2008. The Eagles won in 2017, which no one thought would happen against the Pats, right? So they got very legitimate titles in both cases. The Sixers and Flyers still haven't done it, but we've gotten two, and that's more than a lot of my relatives had seen up to that point.
Coming up after the break, Gabrielle and I discuss more Dave Dombrowski's history with the Red Sox, the terms he left Boston on, and of course, leading them to that World Series title in 2018. We get into that and a whole lot more, but first, a word from our sponsors. Hey everybody, Dan Wilson here from the Locked On Phillies podcast, reminding you that Locked On is not just a network for the Phillies or even just baseball. It's for all sports, and especially your host and headquarters for all things NBA, coming up with the NBA preseason set to kick off later this week and the NBA regular season kicking off later this month. Make sure that you're tuned in to all things on the Locked On NBA Network. Keith Pompey, the host of the Locked On Sixers podcast here in Philadelphia, or whoever your favorite team might be. There's a Locked On NBA podcast. There's Locked On podcast for every team across the NBA. And of course, Locked On started by David Locke, by someone in the basketball world. He, of course, is the play-by-play voice for the Utah Jazz. So make sure with the NBA season coming up, you are caught up to date on all things NBA and your favorite team with Locked On NBA podcasts.
In terms of, you know, you mentioned the culture kind of shifting and the expectations having been raised. If this were pre-2004, and obviously you were a lot younger, I don't know how much you remember from like what the culture around Red Sox fans was back then, but is this like a guy wins a championship? Typically in sports, you get at least a full year of leash after you do something like that. He didn't even get to see, like, within the next 365 days, within a 365 day span, he won a championship and then got fired like before the conclusion of the next season. Was that a surprise to anyone, or is the culture around the Red Sox now such that it doesn't even matter what you did in the last year? It's like, what have you done for me? Like right frickin' now.
Well, it's a lot of that, right? Of you, what have you done for me right now? I mean, obviously there, like that whole recency bias crap is right there, but also, you know, he ended up kind of being a scapegoat. Like, yes, he did make a huge portion of this mess, but at the same time, he wasn't the one that decided to stop spending. He was the guy they told to stop spending, but it wasn't his money to spend. So
I have a feeling, you know, that's going to happen with the Phillies like from day one, unless they are taking a totally different approach. And I'll eat my words if they do. If John Middleton becomes this big spender that he pretended to be when he was with Bryce Harper on that private jet, and he went out there in his private jet rather to meet with him and his wife in Vegas, and he was like, we're going to spend stupid money. And everyone's like, hey, big bags Middleton, like he doesn't care. He just wants to win. If he actually turns into that guy and they actually spend money in smart places and it builds a winner, I'll eat my words. But he has shown no ability or no track record that is who he is. And they're hiring a president who seems like he's going to run into that exact same problem before they even get a championship out of it. Like, I don't fully see what their end game here is with that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that baseball is better when teams are spending money. Baseball is better when all teams are competitive. It's not fun to watch a really good team just absolutely beat up on a team that is absolute trash.
There's nothing worse than bad baseball and having a bad team in August and September that just isn't relevant or fun.
It's like the number of games where I'm like, oh my God, I wish there was a mercy rule. I mean, the Red Sox, literally, there was this one game this season. They had their catcher pitch and their second baseman catch because they were losing 13-1 to like the Orioles or the Rays or something. And it's like, that's not fun baseball. And then you wonder why baseball isn't doing well. It's because, well, you're not putting a good competitive product out there on the field. So I would love it if guys like Middleton, guys like John Henry would just remember that A, you're a billionaire. B, if you put a good product out there, people will be more inclined to buy into it, which will ultimately make you more money in the long run because you're cultivating a fan culture of success and people will want to be a part of that. And if you're not doing that, I mean, there are so many people who, for them, a sporting event is a luxury they cannot afford during, you know, during these troubling times. And honestly, if I had to pay to go to Red Sox games, I also would not be able to afford them. It's a luxury for so many people. So if you think about an 162 game season where people can't even afford one game and you have billionaires crying about not wanting to spend money, I'm sorry, like, I don't really want to hear it. Because there are millions of people who have been supporting your fan base and making you rich for decades, and you don't care enough about them because you want to hug your piles of money. Like, don't come crying to me when your team has, you know, less than a million in fan home attendance for the season. It's your own fault.
Yeah. On the one hand, like, I'm not I agree with everything you just said, and I'm not a billionaire sympathizer by any stretch of the imagination. I almost feel like these guys live in their own world and they're so out of touch. Like we
can't, they definitely do.
Like we can't relate to becoming a billionaire because, at least in my opinion, unfortunately, not everyone, but a lot of people who have reached that status of wealth have gotten there through some form of slimy means along the way. And that kind of thinking has got them as wealthy as they are. I mean, obviously people inherit different situations and things of that nature, but somewhere along the way, like making money and being stingy with money was very important to them. So you almost can't take that out of them. In terms of like, and it's gross. And when they complain, it's kind of, speaks to that point of how out of touch they are and how they're living in their own world and think that the world revolves around them, because that kind of attitude has unfortunately led to where they are today. In terms of, you were talking about the fact that Dombrowski, when he was with the Red Sox, built up a winner, kind of team came back down to earth immediately. John Henry ultimately decided to take the team in a different direction, hire someone like Chaim Bloom, who was with the Rays, who have built up sustainable, like that's a guy in a small market team kind of getting the luxury of spending this kind of money. And Chaim Bloom's a guy who has Philadelphia ties. He's from the area. I believe he went to Penn. Like that was someone a lot of Phillies fans wanted.
No, he went to Yale.
Or he went to Yale. Sorry. He's from Philly though. I knew he was an Ivy League guy and he's from the Philadelphia area. So he had Philadelphia ties and he's from the Rays, and it would have made sense to actually let this guy see what he can do with a bigger payroll. And again, everything is relative. Like the Rays aren't, well, I don't follow the Rays on a day-to-day basis the way I follow the Phillies, but it's like if the, even someone like the Rays, and again, the ownership of the Rays is still filthy rich relative to the average person, but they're sitting there rolling their eyes when the Phillies and Red Sox complain about their payrolls, when they're like, hey, we've been dealing with this for years. And by the way, we just made the World Series with it. Like everything is relative on that scale. And it's like, how can you even take that kind of attitude out of someone like that? And now you were saying how ultimately a better product will lead to more money anyway. That's kind of what I'm most afraid of when it comes to Middleton, because he's seeing dollar signs with a hire like this, that he's going to make the team relevant again. And he's trying to expedite the whole process of actually developing talent and having a sustainable winner. And on the one hand, I get it. Bryce Harper's in his prime. Aaron Nola's in his prime. Alec Bohm just came up. He was a little bit of an older prospect. He's now age 24, I believe. He's going to be entering his prime. You don't have time to enter like this full sustainable rebuild that takes a few years. Like you want to win right now. But having a guy who leaves teams in dumpster fires and is literally just like, it's such a short-term move and a short-term money grab, that very attitude that you kind of mentioned, I think might actually lead to their demise.
Yeah, I honestly, baseball is such a mess. I'm like laughing and also dying inside. But I think ultimately, I mean, the thing with Chaim Bloom is I was really excited when he got hired. Also, just to say for the Jewish geography part of it, Chaim Bloom's wife is from the Boston area and her sister is the head of my Jewish high school. So he also had ties to Boston that made it an attractive
location. It's fair. Yeah. It wasn't like Philly was the only. Yeah. I'm looking up now. He was born in Philly. He's a much younger guy. Has a much younger perspective, which I would have preferred for the Phillies. Dombrowski's in his 60s. Like he's been around the block. It kind of just seems like a traditional hire and going along with what they've been doing as opposed to trying something new.
But anyway, so with Bloom, you know, when he got hired, they announced it on a Friday afternoon. So I was like writing it up right before Sabbath dinner. And
I was going to say, it doesn't really work for him either. He's got Shabbat dinner also.
Yeah, well, he'll like have Shabbos dinner and then go back to the ballpark and stuff. And he was talking about how on Yom Kippur, he left his phone at home because, you know, he's not respectful to bring a phone into the synagogue. And apparently the Rays were playing an important game. I think it was the wild card game or something. And all these people in synagogue kept coming up to him and like talking to him about the score. And he was like, I don't want to know. I'm here because it's Yom Kippur. It's like the holiest day of the year. What are you people doing watching a game on your phones during synagogue? But that's anyway,
awesome. I mean, like, it's awesome and like crazy that the guy who runs a baseball team can't watch his own baseball team.
Keeps like gefilte fish in his office. But with Chaim Bloom, the thing that's so frustrating right now is that I was super excited for him to come here because I said, all right, if he can do that much with the Rays small payroll, imagine what he can do with twice the payroll, even more with the, I mean, the Rays have like a $64 million payroll. So even if the Red Sox had $120 million, you know, when he came in, their payroll had been like 220. So if they're trying to get under the threshold, which he of course immediately did by trading Price and Mookie, and they got down to like 175 or something, $130 million payroll, for example, is a lot for a guy like Chaim Bloom to work with based on his practices coming from Tampa. But what we've seen so far is they're just not spending at all. Like, I mean, I'm very hopeful that they will get Sugano from Japan, but
shortstop, right? Yeah.
The pitcher.
Oh, wait. Yuki. Who's the shortstop coming over?
Oh God, I don't remember his name. I just wrote a whole piece on Tomoyuki Sugano, though. He's awesome. He's kind of like the second Bauer option in Major League Baseball coming in from the Giants in Japan. And, you know, he's like, he's won the Japanese equivalent of the Cy Young twice. He's 31 years old. He'll probably command like $10 million a year. And I was like, okay, well, this is the kind of guy that Bloom should get. But what I'm curious is, all right, well, for the third year in a row, are you not going to do anything during the offseason? Or is Chaim Bloom finally going to be allowed off of the leash? Because unlike Dombrowski, Chaim Bloom doesn't really need to be on a leash because he knows how to be fiscally responsible. So you're already under the threshold. Why aren't you spending money? Why are you collecting infield prospects when you don't need 30 infield prospects? Why are you not doing something while all of these other teams are snatching up people like Drew Smyly? Like, what's happening here?
By the way, the shortstop, a little bit of a classic American baseball fan on my part. It was Ha-Seong Kim, and he's from the Korean League, from the KBO, rather. So he's a shortstop that's projected to come over. And I was recently looking into him because, you know, the Phillies didn't offer someone like Didi Gregorius a qualifying offer, which I still don't understand because
I don't understand that either. He's great.
And he's great. He's had an up and down career at the plate. He certainly benefits from the short porch at Citizens Bank Park. And like, he's going to command a 3 or 4 year contract because of the shortstop class coming out next year. So you either offer him the 1 year and then you have Bryson Stott, who's one of your better prospects in the organization, which who the hell knows whether Dombrowski will have him on the team a year from now, but he's projected to come up in 2022. You keep Gregorius for a year, or you get the draft compensation out of the fact that he would have declined the offer. So I was looking into him because he was in this MLB trade rumors article I was reading about how he is like, was an all-star in the KBO and which MLB team should be in on him. And if the Phillies need a shortstop, I don't suspect that they're going to go after him, but it would actually be kind of a nice addition. Back to what you were saying, the Phillies kind of have.
We have Xander Bogaerts. We don't need a shortstop.
No. You're right. In terms of
and the Jeter Downs, we got Jeter Downs too. So I don't know.
It's true. Yeah, and the Red Sox, you know, gonna have to root for a guy named Jeter for years. Could be
of all the things that the Red Sox do not need,
a guy named Jeter.
Infielders and infield prospects. That is like the only thing we have going.
You're not
for
in
us
need of. The Phillies, nothing. In terms of to speak to their farm system, Scott Kingery, very hyped prospect when he came up. They actually gave him a contract and he was just like horrible last year, like arguably the worst hitter in all of Major League Baseball. And they're in a situation where they might have to play him 162 games next year because they didn't bring back Gregorius and if they don't sign anyone. So you're going to move an aging Gene Segura back to shortstop. I mean, I could go on and on about what this team's going to look like. And with my guess now today with the Dombrowski news, he will probably go all in to make this team the best it can be in just 2021 and not really think about the future. But to your point, like, you're complaining that they don't go after, you know, pitchers that they could use, someone like Smyly, who was a former Philly, or, you know, Charlie Morton, signed with the Braves. Like, I was annoyed with how long the Phillies president search was taking, because good and smart teams like get out in front of the free agency market and don't just wait for the big names to sign. They get the, you know, marginal pitcher who is maybe in the aging part of his career, but could still be a really solid, maybe number four starter for you. And the fact that they just brought back someone like Vince Velasquez, who's just so bad and has consistently been so bad, like, it doesn't generate any excitement for next year. And you also don't see the light at the end of the tunnel with this thing, because, as you mentioned, Red Sox and Phillies alike, the Phillies have the 23rd ranked farm system in baseball. The Red Sox have 25.
It's, you know what, it's not a good position to be in. And it all comes back to how much Dave Dombrowski and Chaim Bloom are going to be allowed to do. Because I mean, for most people, money cannot solve all problems. But you know what? In Major League Baseball, money can solve a lot of your problems.
A number of problems, yeah.
Yes.
What's the line from Moneyball where the actor who plays John Henry like literally has a quote about that when he's offering Billy Bean? Like, I'm sure you're, you know, familiar with it. Like, one of the beauties of having money is to disregard what baseball likes, doesn't like, thinks, doesn't think. It could very well work for a team like the Phillies, like the Red Sox. And that was the same exact thing we're talking about now, hiring a small market guy and saying, look, come here, we'll give you a big payroll.
Yeah, well, small market teams have been getting creative for decades now. And then the big market teams see what they're doing and they say, okay, well, we can do it
with more money and more
right, resources. Like analytics. And now the same thing, we can tank, still make money. We can have analytics, but with more money, you know, we can poach and poach and poach from the small market teams. But at the end of the day, this league is better when as many teams are competitive as possible. And the sad truth is that most ownership groups can make that happen if they want to. The sad thing is that they don't want to.
There's revenue sharing and economics and numbers that they're running all the time. And again, is the priority actually to win or and like generate interest for fans down the line? Or are they just concerned about the bottom line next year? Unfortunately, everything speaks to the fact that Middleton is, you know, already filing his taxes for next year and trying to maneuver any numbers that he can. It's just really annoying. Like, they have the second longest playoff drought in baseball, and the Red Sox have won two World Series, gotten good, gotten bad, gotten good, gotten bad, literally in the span that the Phillies have just been bad. Like, it's so, like, what feels like a generation of a team to, I'm sure you and many Boston fans, like, goes by so, like, the window's there, then it goes away, then it comes back. With the Phillies, it's just been all bad. And the interest has gotten higher more recently, especially with the Harper signing. And when they first signed him and they came out of the gate great that season, but down the stretch of the season, they got bad again and there was a lack of interest. And then they hired Joe Girardi. And once again, in a 60-game season, the bullpen was so incredibly bad. And one of John Middleton's great sound bites is how he went out to sign Bryce Harper, because that's like a organizational changing decision. And then he says, in terms of bullpen decisions, I don't even want to know about those decisions. Like, I don't touch them. And they had the worst bullpen like ever. They just make such buffoons of themselves consistently that I have, like, anytime I get worked up over it, it just like eats at me. It's so annoying. Because I watch the team religiously day in and day out, which I guess makes me part of the problem that I continually fund this beast by paying money for tickets, buying merchandise, watching games on TV, which gives them ad revenue. And it's just more of the same consistently.
That'll do it for part one of my conversation with Gabrielle Starr. Again, stay tuned for part two. Gabrielle and I continue our conversation comparing the Phillies and the Red Sox, talking Dave Dombrowski. And we got into a little bit of a sidebar conversation of how she developed things like Girl at the Game, as well as we mutually bonded here on the first night of Hanukkah over the fact that we are both Jewish sports fans, both Jewish baseball fans. So we talked some stories there that you surely will not want to miss. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Again, stay tuned for part two.